you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Talking Monkeys, the official podcast of 12 Monkeys, your favorite show. My name is Clark Wolf. It's very nice to talk to you all again. We have a wonderful group of gentlemen with us today. We have Mr. Terry Metalis.
Hi.
Ta-da.
We have Mr. Todd Stashwick.
Hello.
And we have Mr. Sean Tretta.
Hello.
Hello. So guys, episode 207, Meltdown. This was the episode that you guys were telling me that I was going to love because you know I loves me some scary movies.
Yeah, that's
pretty scary.
And yep. I sure did. I liked it very much.
The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Cronenberg's.
Yeah.
So the first thing I wanted to actually start out with is kind of it's like a minor thing, but it's big overall in the show. We open this episode in 1959, and you know, the soundtrack that's playing, the song, like, I just feel like this show overall has such an incredible, interesting, compelling soundtrack, whether it's the score or whether it's like music from different time periods.
Yeah.
You know, and we've learned that time, or we've learned that sometimes these songs, they come back more and more and they become important. So was there any particular reason why you guys chose this song to open?
That song, Moving Train, was written for 12 Monkeys, actually.
Was it?
By Kelsey Carter. Yeah.
Fooled me.
And
I had
she's
no
on
idea.
Twitter, and she's very, very talented, and met her through the Impractical Joker guys. And she did some music for us last year and has done a bunch this year. And she's got a good one for Jennifer Goins coming up. So, yeah, it's really catchy. That song is really catchy, too. And she talks about there's a time machine in it. It's a great song.
That's exciting. That's very cool. Yeah. I honestly thought that was a classic from the 50s that I just heard before.
She's really good. You should all just go buy her stuff right now.
What was her name?
Kelsey Carter.
Kelsey Carter. All right. Okay. So back in 2016, where we last left Cassie, and she had just been possessed, it appeared.
Something very wrong is going on with her. Yes.
Indeed.
She has something in her eye.
Yeah.
She has something real big in her eyeballs. And so she kind of appears to come to. And then she splinters. So we're back in 2044.
Yes.
And in wonderful horror movie style, did something come back with her? But before we get into Cassie living in
sexy time, right?
I was exactly how yeah. could I skip over sexy time? Sexy
Jones
time
got
in,
laid
in jammies.
What?
Yes,
weren't they playing cards though?
Is that what we're calling it?
Yes. Post.
I mean,
we're calling yeah. it?
Who doesn't play cards after a romp in
their shuffles of death,
as it's they say. Shuffle. It was a cute scene, though, I have to say.
They're great.
Getting to spend a little bit more time with Jonesy and Dr. Eklund. But interrupted, of course, by Cassie's, you know, reappearing. She sees the witness there with her, and the audience is going, is she still possessed?
Something happening with her, yeah.
Meanwhile, Ramsey and Sam are hanging out with Sam's model of the facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Sam's a pretty smart little kid, I gotta say.
He is a really smart kid with a...
And he's got a lot of time on his hands.
He sure does.
Go outside and hang out, so...
We had a really good teacher.
The Deke?
Yeah, Deacon. His mentor.
Yeah. Deacon does a lot of dioramas in his spare time.
Right.
A lot.
I'll show you how this works. First, you fold the cardboard.
Yeah. No, you're using too much glue. Why do I suddenly, when I do Deacon, or just sort of drop in loose voice?
Like no, not with a kid.
Some, like,
it's not
drive
the voice.
Time DJ.
Right.
So Cole comes and grabs Ramsey and
weather is red and stormy.
you're gonna want to bring a temporal shield right. when you go out today.
So Cassie comes and grabs Ramsey Cole does. And Cassie tells them about what happened. And basically she reveals this, he chose. I thought this was a really interesting line. He chose to appear as Aaron. So kind of confirming that you know, the witness is shape-shifting, but also knows what they're thinking and manipulating them.
Right.
Is this something that, you know, for our writers here, is this something that we can maybe look forward to seeing in future episodes?
Well, I think we're seeing it. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, you know, Cassie was clearly programmed with the immersion thing, so her head is all scrambled right now. And by the end of the episode, we know exactly what they were doing for the witness by programming her and opening up her mind to a lot of things. So, and it's not quite
over.
Yeah, it's not quite over. She saw some things when,
you've just gotten a glimpse of its purpose, let's say.
Yes, exactly.
In this one, and big stuff to come.
And she may have an advantage now too, because that happened to her, because she's now seen things probably from the witness's head.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Yes.
And in that same conversation, she kind of tells them that the group that the witness splintered. And I think we're kind of left to wonder, like, does he have a time machine too? Or it gets brought up. The question is posed. But I would say we don't think he has a time machine, right?
Well, he's got something.
He's been moving through time in some way. So we don't know how, whether his conscious is being beamed from another place or he's moving around. And his outfit looks a lot like a time machine, and I don't know.
All right.
Jones had once said that to expect that they're dealing with an enemy that has capabilities equal to or greater than their own. So it's a distinct possibility the witness is, you know, got some game on them in some respect.
To be continued.
Yes.
All right. So after that, you know, Cassie's still clearly shaken up, and Deacon steps in.
He does?
To take her to her room, I suppose.
Yeah.
So Todd, you know, we're still seeing our softer side a little bit. We know that he cares about Cassie.
Deacon has always cared about people he cares about.
That's very true.
I mean, the day, the moment you met the guy in season one, he says, look, I got 200 people strong that are fed and clothed. They have drink. They have amenities, and we're taking care of them. So I think now you throw on top of that, it's Cassie. So he obviously has more affection for her than most, Deacon is he is multi-layered.
He is indeed.
Peel that onion. Yeah.
And Cole, as we see in the he is not happy about this.
No.
In fact, a little bit later, you know, in one of the next scenes, Cassie goes, you know, she's definitely seeing something, and she goes and sees Cole over by the news board, and he actually goes out of his way to say, just so you know. Yeah. Just so you know, this doesn't bother me at all. And it's right. Like, okay, well, it's
pretty transparent. There, Cole.
I'd say.
Just like, so what? Great.
But it was kind of amusing. But we're seeing, I mean, I guess I need to find a better word than soft, because that's not the right word. But we're seeing some affection.
You're seeing a definite deeper connection between Rayleigh and Deacon. And actually, somebody highlighted that interesting connection it was in the Zap2it article. They talked about the Deacon Cassie connection.
Right.
As I'm not sure if she softens him, but she gives the audience an opportunity to see a side of him that you hadn't seen previously.
Yes.
And it rounds him out in ways that just the other circumstances that he was presented in weren't shown in previous episodes. You will also find the deeper connection will be revealed even more as the season progresses. But I think he advocates for her. He sympathizes with her. I think he's definitely attracted to her. I think so. A lot of things, like he gets super protective of her because of how out of sync she suddenly was plopped in the middle of this situation.
And I think for her, well, Deacon's a lot like Cole from last season, isn't he?
I was just about to say.
The Cole that she met was very close to the Deacon of now.
You do what you got to do.
And that's what she needs.
Well, and also, you know, if she brings out something in him, I would argue it seems like maybe he brings out something in her,
well,
too.
Well, definitely. And that was even shown, like, just from the moment that they have the moment that he comes to her And then she asks him, or she tells him about the pills, and she can help him. And he just shows her immediately how to hold a knife, just like lesson one in surviving the apocalypse. And we can assume that there was a lot more of that. He helped her stay alive, and I think she respects and is grateful for that. She certainly learned quick.
Yes.
And then came to it on her own. But he was there and patient and kept her alive in situations that she might normally not have survived.
I'm excited to see more of this dynamic later throughout the series.
It goes places.
I can't wait. I'm excited. But speaking of the old third wheel Cole, no, but he actually, you know, she says to him in that same scene by the news board, you know, I guess we don't know each other like we used to, which definitely comes into play later on in this episode.
Yes.
But we'll get to that, I'm sure. Okay, so Jones is suspicious. She wants to review the data about what had happened, you know, from Cassie's when Cassie was in 2016, and, you know, maybe see if something else was with her or another traveler was with her. And she figures out that, yeah, that's actually kind of what happened. So we are confirmed that something came back.
There's another tether. There's something very strange going on, and it looks like it's in the facility.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the core is overloading.
That's not good.
That's bad news.
Bad news.
Bad news bears.
And the machine itself is
sabotage.
Yes.
Something has been sabotaged.
Sabotage.
So you say sabotage, I say sabotage. You heard that? William Shatner's? Look it up, guys. It's good.
So this is an episode I noticed, too, that took place mostly in the facility.
Bottle episode.
Yeah, bottle episode, if you will.
Sorry, most expensive bottle episode.
No kidding.
12 days.
that was a crazy episode.
This is a money saver, this one, for us.
Yeah.
Cole swinging over the rapids.
Mutated time travel.
About to say, and then we've got the time travel monsters.
Cronenberg's.
Yeah.
Jones, her experiments have finally come back in some way.
What a great. So let's go get into that. The machine is not malfunctioning.
It's locked in a perpetual splinter sequence.
Well, somebody flipped
the lens array.
And indeed. So it started
makes perfect sense.
Throwing all sorts of splinter energy all over the place.
And as a result, things are popping out everywhere.
We're all poltergeist.
Very bad.
Very, very bad. But it's also,
the dogs. I love the dogs.
Yeah, the dogs and the monsters.
Kurt Acevedo was so afraid of those dogs.
Was he really?
Yes, he was. It was not good.
It was a method acting in that scene.
Always.
That's why in that lot, there is a line where he's like, goddamn dog attacked me. He's totally real. He's really fucking pissed off.
So the monsters are the Cronenbergs that we see. You know, there are early splinter volunteers, RIP Marshall, because poor old Marshall, he gets Cole kind of.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I regret is the makeup job was so good.
It was beautiful.
His arm being sort of bent around and sewn, like not sewn, but like stuck
kind
into
of
him.
Yeah. His body.
And
his
you
chest.
Could see his lungs moving on the outside.
It was awful.
I wish we had had more footage of it, and we had better. You know, it's so dark in our temporal facility, you can't see. But it was amazing.
There is a nice shot of the pan down.
Yeah,
it shows you.
And sound design is just hear the wet sucking noises.
Super creepy. Yeah. Super creepy, y'all. All right, so Cassie then declares the witness is here,
right
in front of the group, and Cole says, "Okay, I'm gonna go handle the machine," and Cassie says, "I'm gonna go too." And Deacon steps in, and he's like, "No, you're not. Don't go there." But she's doing it anyway.
I don't tell her what to do.
No, sir.
I can offer up sage advice.
Besides, it gives you an opportunity.
Yep.
To have a buddy romp with Colonel Ty.
Oh my God, it was such a great episode.
That was super fun. So can we talk a little bit? Let's get into that right now because you and Dr.
Eklund.
Oh my Michael, notes. Then
Michael
what will I do?
Hogan.
By the way, somewhere online, people are referring to him as Vance. Remember, like at one point we named him Vance.
Is it Vance?
No, it's always David, Dr. David Eklund.
That's weird.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, but at one point we had talked about it being Vance. Maybe he went out and like cast maybe the casting.
That's probably what it was. Ooh. I think I wrote.
They're
Van
so
Zeklin.
Crafty.
Yeah, Van Zeklin. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, so you and Dr. David Vance Eklund.
Yes.
So y'all, you guys go
Vance
off
is
on
his middle name.
Yeah, exactly. You guys go off on your mission
to
and
find another Lenzeray.
The old one.
The
that
old
burned
one.
Out the core.
The original one.
That. Yeah. So we
from
know that
year.
This is yeah. dangerous to begin with.
Yes.
Yeah. But you know, you guys, it was nice for you guys to get a little screen time together.
Getting a chance to pair up like the complete violent wild card with the pacifist
exactly.
was such there's just so much room for comedy there. And he himself is such a joker and so willing to play that it was one of my favorite times on the job working with him. And I'm such a huge fan of him from Battlestar that I literally at Comic-Con, they gave us these books, these Battlestar books, and I fanboyed on him and I brought my book in and he signed it that day and he was so flattered and he wanted to actually look. He hadn't seen the books. He was like, can I keep it for a few days? Because he didn't want to look at it.
Dude, Todd, you fracking nerd.
Fracking nerd. God damn it.
Nerd.
But yes, so the chance for these two characters to be put together in a very extreme situation, one that required violence
yes.
to survive, brought out so many different colors and flavors to these two guys. It was great.
It was fun. And also, I thought it was really interesting to watch how Ramsey sort of led the charge and reacted to the military team.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of like...
Who, Deacon?
That's what I meant. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's what I meant to say. Yeah. I did not mean to say Ramsey.
Yeah.
Yes. So Deacon, you know, like, okay, what year do you think it is? You know?
Yeah, that was, I remember writing, I was on an airplane. The script was we went through many versions. Chris Monfett.
This
did,
is probably
did
the
first
hardest episode.
Really, yeah. And then Richard Robbins came in and did an amazing job. And then I always do a last pass. I remember I was on an airplane back from Toronto to Los Angeles in the middle of the night working on my pass of this. And it was just completely dark. Everybody was sleeping. And the only light I had was from this laptop. And I was just fully immersed in this episode and everything. It actually, the episode came out even better than what was in my head. But that scene was, to me, was like your Han Solo
yeah.
kind of moment.
Yeah.
And that scene actually came out better because he does a great, you're like for the last, and then he jumps in. He's like, 85 years. Like, I love that bit. It's
and,
so
and that
good.
Was, and that was Hogan
yeah.
because he was playing the scientist in that scene. And so he of course would be this math genius. Yeah. And so when we were rehearsing it, he just sort of chimed in. And then so originally, I think it was just Deacon that did the line. And so it was funny that, like, well, Deacon doesn't do the math. Like, so he's like, the last, and like, I don't know. And he immediately 85. Just chimed in with the actual amount
yeah,
of years.
It's great.
And he just goes, 85 years. And I just paired it right afterwards.
Fun.
It was just, yeah, just
I love
heartbreaking at the same time because you finally found a play buddy.
Yeah.
And then short-lived.
That's the show.
I mean, was that hard for you guys, by the way, to say goodbye to David Vance Eklund?
Well, it's important it was hard because we love Michael Hogan, but it's really important for Jones
yes.
in the next episode and her arc and where she's about to go. The next episode is very Jones. It's all about Jones.
Yeah.
It's all about the suffering that she has endured from this, and also, you know, blames herself for every single bit of this.
Yep.
So everybody's lost hope. And next episode, which I know you've seen,
yes,
it's one of our best. It's one of the best of the series.
It made me cry at the end,
and it's really something not to be missed, and we're really proud of.
Yeah, as you should, as well you
should.
So
it's all part of that. You know?
The big thing is, like, we never kill anybody for shock value.
No.
It's always, you know, like, you know, we didn't kill Olivia, but her getting stabbed was mostly about really that being for Jennifer.
The cathartic.
And, you know, Eklund dies for Jones. And it always has, you know, some sort of major motivation
yeah.
for our main characters.
It definitely raises the stakes too. I mean, we can sometimes, when we're off on our missions, you know, in the 70s or into 2016, sometimes we can forget the stakes that are, and that's not, you know, that's just because you're so immersed in whatever the mission is. And so I think it's a really important reminder that these are people fighting to save humanity.
Yeah, and I wish I could say that was the last one in the season, but there's a lot more.
Yeah, it's rough. Yeah. What else is fascinating about that episode, again, with like having so much fun horror and comedy in it, and then these just deep emotional dives towards the end.
Yeah, I mean, Jones's line, "I never loved you," was just...
When I read that, I said, she is saving someone's life by trying to save their life by telling them that she doesn't love them, and therefore it's an act of love to tell them that she doesn't love them.
Yeah. A paradox.
I mean,
peel the onion.
Yeah, the Richard Robbins, who wrote the episode, wrote that exchange, and I mean, it's so great. It's the opposite thing you say. Yes. You know what I mean? And
but it's also said and it's in beautiful, the right way.
In the right way, and they nailed it, and it's just...
It's a little Spock scene.
Yeah, it's good.
It's very good.
The other thing I liked about what Richard pushed in that episode was how Eklund is okay with the sacrifice. He's like, hey, you know what?
What a good run.
This is how I'm going to go out, you know? And I thought that was... What a great... You know, obviously he's scared and as he starts to disintegrate and it's terrifying, but it's just, and Hogan sells it so well. It's a great, and you're intercutting all that with Cole, you know, dangling over the thing. And it's just, it's a nice sequence. Drew Nichols cut it, was the editor on it. It was really very good too.
So speaking of Cole, let's get into what's going on the other side of the facility.
Meanwhile,
back at the facility. Uh-huh. As we had mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Kirk was not a fan of the dog. There's a dog that attacks Ramsey and Sam, and actually makes contact with Ramsey. But while this is happening, a shadowy figure comes and takes Sam.
Cassie.
As we find out, Cassie is our shadowy
figure. She's gone full witness.
Indeed. Indeed. So she...
It's all Blair. Yeah. Linda.
Yeah.
Aw, poor Cassie.
No vomit, though.
So, yeah, no vomit this time. We'll save that for a later episode.
There's some vomit later in the season.
Yes, there is.
That's a good tease. It's a good tease.
So she basically takes Sam. She's got him at gunpoint. She locks herself in, what would you call that room?
That's the core room.
The core room.
That's
okay.
That's the energy.
And Ramsey and Cole obviously both have skin in this game. They want to save their respective loved ones. And meanwhile, they also want to not die themselves.
Right.
Deacon appears. And so basically they all have to work together because Sam gives this great clue. Great little, you know. I do. I really love that this kid was so smart.
He's
like,
cool.
I like smart kids.
Yeah.
Because some kids are smart.
You know, it was scary for us to have the kid in the show.
Of course.
You know, because we're like, at what point are we doing, the kid?
Boxy?
Yeah, Boxy. And so it was important for us to get the right actor, and Peter was great, and to, you know, and obviously what happens is important too for Ramsey.
Absolutely.
You know, and where he's about to go.
Yes. So, Cole goes down there and, you know, through much, the military guys show back up and there's obviously a scuffle because he's got to climb down to swing across the water, across the rapids. But one of the things that I really liked was when Deacon says to Ramsey, you know, you have to go in there because he doesn't have it in him and neither do I.
Yeah. And especially on the heels from the last time we saw Deacon, who looks at Cassie and says, at least somebody here has to make the hard calls. And then you go, whoop, Achilles heel. He does. That dragon's missing a scale. Yeah.
So, but Ramsey realizes that, you know, you're right.
He's right.
Yep. And so he goes in.
Plus she shot him once, so.
That's true. That's actually a really good point, and something that I, you know, will play out over the course of the next couple of episodes. Ramsey and Cassie, I mean.
They have a lot of history.
There's no love lost there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's tough.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's really, really.
Deacon, knows. So he's like, that's why he looks at him and says, Cole ain't gonna do it.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna do it. So you're the only one.
I love that moment.
Yeah,
there's lots of really great love triangles. And when I say love, I mean all different kinds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and one of them is Cole, Cassie, and Ramsey, and then of course Deacon and Cole and Cassie.
Plus, what's important about that scene is it really is, after all the stuff with Foreman, it's showing them working as a team.
I've loved that because, as you guys will remember, I was, you know, Sally skeptical about if we can really trust, you know, Deacon to have it be water under the bridge, no pun intended, in this situation. But yeah, it was really cool to see the three of them working together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the stakes are so high at this point. But the back half of this episode where we're getting into is some of my favorite moments when he's faced with Cassie and he's like, you're not Cassie, you're the witness. And then the witness finally speaks to Cole is a moment too that really worried about because, you know, it's
terrified.
Is this going to work, Cassie, with this voice and this look and, you know. And Amanda pulled it off great, and the sound design was great, and like it's a great, great moment. And what I love is, and Grant, who directed the episode, did this amazing. I mean, the stuff with her in the house of Cedar and Pine, stuck in the witness's head, and the stuff that she sees, and she sees at that moment, that place called Titan. Mm-hmm. That is the thing. We should just talk about that.
Great.
Most important. I mean, like, so many big things happen this episode, especially with Sam, which we'll get into. But her seeing Titan, which is a name we've heard a couple times in the voices of primaries, this is the single most important thing. It's where the witness is. It's the back. We're about to go on a dark Wizard of Oz journey.
It's the interesting thing, and really the difficult thing, is like conceptually, it was pretty clear what this episode was going to be. It's like this, you know, sci-fi exorcism in a sense. But, you know, it is a time travel show, and we're very, you know, married and entrenched into that idea. And while a lot of these things seem supernatural, we had to sort of build it from a time travel base. So not everything's super clear right now as to why certain things are happening the way they are, but it was important for us to justify everything that happens in our world.
Well, the idea that signal, that tether that came through time and linked to Cassie's head is a sci-fi idea. It's just, it's a projection of a consciousness.
Yeah, and all the Cronenbergs and everything, that wasn't ghosts coming in.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
they were all connected to that machine, which is, you know, a big thing for Jones right now.
Absolutely. And so, you know, after the witness speaks and Cole is face to face with him through Cassie, he tells Ramsey, you know, don't shoot her, shoot me, because this is the thing that's going to bring Cassie back.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I was not expecting it. Like,
good.
That really surprised me. And I was like, clever girl. But it made so much sense once he said it. And it was like, yeah, that's the only thing that you can do in this situation.
Right. And it starts because we see a lot of the fans like freaking out over the divide between Cassie and Cole. And this was starting to stitch that, especially with the episode starting with her sitting there going, yeah. Whatever.
We should probably go on Twitter and be like, you know, after 7 airs, if you only watch one episode of 12 Monkeys this season, which you shouldn't, but if you're crazy enough,
watch all of them.
Like
many
times. Episode
at different
8,
houses.
Buy it on iTunes.
Episode 8 is the one to see because it so much is. Yeah,
it is. As a fan who has seen one episode ahead, I can confirm all of these things.
Yes.
And yeah, you guys need to watch it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, so this does snap Cassie out of, you know, her situation. But, oh, my gosh, Sam got splintered.
What?
What, guys?
Wait a second.
I know.
I guess I have to rewatch it.
Where did he go?
When did he go? And when did he go?
Who the heck took his hand
where
at the end?
The
and what
is Sam Ramsey? Figure.
So
very smart kid with a lot of pain.
I wrote down in my notes, wait, period. Is Sam the witness?
He is an architect.
It's interesting.
Of dioramas.
He knows that facility inside and out.
He sure did.
He would know a lot of things.
He sure would.
He would have a point of view.
He was there for a lot of things that happened that the witness might need to
know. I'm going to go on record as saying I think he is a contender.
I think he's, you know, he should be on your list.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's what there was one review that was just like, I can't. He was so mad about I'm tired of this whole witness thing of who's a witness thing. He was just like, he's like, I don't know. I don't know who he is. And I'm tired of like, but I think for the most part, it is working pretty well. The because this isn't just a series of red herrings about the witness.
No,
there's a reason you're looking at everybody. That's all I can say. It's important. It's important to the story.
Well, and
that
if
you wonder about the witness.
And I'm not going to say which specific moments because that would be tipping it. But there's specific moments in many episodes where people are going to get to the end of the season and then hopefully go back and watch the game like, oh, that happened. Yes. I thought it this happened because of this in this moment. But really, it happened because of this.
It is a it does have. I don't want to say like an M. Night twist to it because it's not. I mean, the because you'll very well probably will have guessed, rightly so, about
there's a definite inevitable yet surprising conclusion.
But you will go back and be like, that's what this has all been about. And it is connected to Sam, to Ramsey, to Cassie, to Cole.
Can I just say it? It's Sam.
You heard it here first.
It's Cole.
Oh, man. It's all over now.
It's Deacon.
It's Aaron. It's Jones. It's Aaron.
It's Eklund. It's David Van Eklund.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. The machine Cronenberged all of them all into them, one being.
Oh, is it Marshall? Not
it's
Marshall.
Marshall.
Not Marshall.
That guy needs
it's
a mask, Eklund. Though.
Witness is dead. End of series.
Eklund. It's all out of love.
But
Witness is dead.
But yeah, no, I mean... And so, but basically, kind of coming out of this episode, it's really about, you know, Cassie and Jones.
Well, and that's where I want to wrap up because, you know, that's about our time. But, you know, boy, these two women who I would argue and have been saying since season one are some of the most proactive, interesting, smart, savvy characters on television appear to be at rock bottom.
Yes. And Jones now knows what she needs to do, and Cassie is going to help her. And
credits.
That's where we'll leave it. You cannot miss this episode.
No.
You really can't.
Cannot miss this. If,
in fact, what I will tell you is that the first thing I wrote down in my notes were, oh, geez.
Yeah.
That was literally the first note I wrote.
Of
the next episode. Yeah. Was, yes. Oh, geez.
There we go. Yeah.
So that's your little cliffhanger. Up. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for chatting today. I hope you
thank
all enjoyed,
you.
Our audience enjoyed this last episode. And gentlemen, where can everyone find you on social media?
I am at Todd Stashwick on the Twitter.
I'm at Sean_Tretta.
And I am at Terry Metalis.
And you can find me at Clark Wolf, Clark with an E, Wolf with an E, on the interwebs. And guys, if you like the podcast, please don't forget to rate it, review it, share it, subscribe on iTunes, all of the above. And that'll do it for today. We will
tell
see
your
you.
Friends to watch the
yes,
show.
Tell your
not
friends.
Miss it.
And
don't
yes, we'll see you next week for episode 208, Lullaby.
All right.